From Umzel's Grand Center's community room, welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Thanks for being with us, and welcome to our studio audience. So you want to start a podcast. I think we can help with that on this program. Some of our listeners may be asking, what is a podcast? Before the discussion is over, I think we'll answer these and many other questions for you. Podcasts have become a major part of the digital landscape, and every year more and more people are listening to them and producing them. St. Louis is a popular podcast market. Podcasts put you in touch with myriad subject matter, from outstanding journalism to crazy hobbies. St. Louis Public Radio is putting some of our best people into podcast mode these days, and one of them is with us tonight as part of our panel. Camille Stanley is co-reporter host with Tim Lloyd of our We Live Here podcast series. She is on your far left. Welcome, Camille. Our other panelists, local podcasters, all coming from that direction, your left to my right. Alex Innan's Future, a great podcast, has gotten a lot of traction in local civic and political media. He is the editor of NextSTL.com. Dustin Bryson's podcast addresses St. City Dreamers. He cut his podcast teeth in Florida before seeing the light and coming to us. Adrian and Wendy Buskey do Nerd for a Living, which has been up and running since 2013. Thank you all so much for being with us. Looking forward to what's going to be happening here tonight. I'll start with the Buskeys, and they can figure out how to divvy up this question. It'll be the same question to the entire lineup here as we start. Give us, if you would, Adrian, a brief description of your podcast and why you decided to get into it at all.
Well, the Nerd for a Living podcast is a show about people who work in genre entertainment industries professionally. So that's comics, gaming, anime, film, TV, art, crafting, publishing, things along those lines. And so the show began primarily as an educational resource for people who were actively looking for careers in those fields, the nerdy fields. And eventually, over time, it kind of evolved into sort of a blend of education and entertainment, because we found that a lot of people keyed into the show not just because they wanted the job, but because they just enjoyed those conversations. So it was entertainment for them. They just liked hearing what people had to say about their lives and careers. And so now I think we think of it as more of like an edutainment kind of program.
And I guess I'll tackle kind of how the podcast got started, which was when we launched Nerd for a Living as a brand. We intended to be just an overall educational resource, and the podcast was really a marketing tool for us. We thought, okay, well, we'll add this in so that we can have a little bit more engagement with professionals and also some outreach with people in finding an audience. And what we realized over the years that we've been working on it is the podcast that is the focus that both of us really enjoy doing and also the most valuable and the thing that the audience really likes the most. So we've kind of grown with it and definitely like honed in on like, okay, well, Nerd for a Living as a brand is really the Nerd for a Living podcast.
Yeah, we basically streamlined it. When we first started out, it was a website that had a podcast as sort of added value on it. And then over 3 years, discovered that the podcast was the product, and we basically kind of knocked out all the stuff we didn't like doing and did that instead.
Let's turn now to Dustin Bryson, our friend from Florida originally. Same question to you, Dustin. A brief description of your podcast and why you got into it at all.
Yeah, so St. City Dreamers is a podcast for people who are interested in the discontinuation of being robots and people that are starting to want to live in and lean into their dreams. I am entrepreneurial in nature, and so we interview a lot of folks who want to do their own thing, write their own stories. I'm a storyteller at heart, and so I have leaned into that world. Not everybody on the podcast that we interview is an entrepreneur, but some folks live their dreams in the evenings in other ways, in ballet or whatever. But they're not afraid to push into the things that they want. We live in a sort of cyclical nature in our society where we kind of get up, eat the same breakfast, go to the same job, leave the same job, go to the same coffee shop, come home. And for some of us, That's The Matrix. And so this is a podcast for people that want to get out of the matrix. And if I'm being totally honest, if I'm being 100% real with y'all, I started it because it was selfish, the reason I started it. I lived in Florida, but then I lived in Austin. And I moved here, and I didn't know anybody. And I thought, I want to meet interesting people. I want to meet people who have cool stories, who are living their life and know about the cool stuff in the city. And so instead of just saying, hey, I've heard about you on Instagram, do you want to have coffee? Which is super creepy, by the way. I say, fancy an interview? And then everybody's like, you want to talk to me about my story? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, for sure. And I'll pay for your coffee. And so no one says no. So that's what that's about.
Well, we hope you've met those interesting people since you've been here.
Tons of them. Yeah.
Alex Enan, how about you?
Including this guy.
Sure. Did you interview?
I didn't interview yet.
Why not?
I will.
Okay. This is getting very
circular. But I did ask you if I could use your space. And you
Yes, we have collaborated. So the Future Great City podcast is really an extension of Next STL. So I've run the website for 6 or 7 years, and podcasting was something that I've thought about off and on for a couple of years. And it got to the point where it was pretty easy. I'm teamed up with STL Vernacular, which is kind of almost a publishing house, a production house for some of these podcasts, and a place where you can find all the St. Louis area podcasts. And so it took a couple of these triggers for somebody to say, look, just record, send me the file, I'll do the rest, for me to kind of take the leap and do it. But it's very much an extension of the website. And what I found is I was, you know, to interview someone and write up an interview and transcribe it and make it somewhat interesting could take 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And I'm not sure anyone is really reading long, you know, back and forth interviews. And so, you know, what I realized is that instead of spending 5 hours interviewing someone and having it come off really bland, you could sit down and have a conversation and get that online, and a lot more people are going to pay attention to it. And what I found is that it really humanizes people. And I write a lot about historic preservation and transportation issues and stuff, and a lot of it comes off kind of like you're ignoring the people involved and you're ignoring the personalities making these decisions, and you can complain about something without humanizing it, and bringing people in and talking to them about why they make decisions and what their passions are really changes the conversation.
Thank you, Alex. And Camille, we have to go at this a little bit differently with you, because you came to us from Tampa, where you were a print reporter. Mm-hmm. This is a whole new field for you, this podcasting thing, right?
Yeah, so I'm a longtime journalist, first-time podcaster for We Live Here, which does deep-dive storytelling about race, class, poverty, and power here in St. Louis. But we have a national reach, so none of these issues that we're covering are happening in a vacuum, so we don't treat them like they're happening in a vacuum. Tim, my co-host, who is in the room, we like to say that we are tackling these really sometimes tough topics, which can be like broccoli, but we try to put a lot of butter on it to make it kind of digestible for people.
Right. Tell me something about the learning curve stepping into this new medium.
Well, you know, like I said, I was a journalist before, and We Live Here is a kind of journalism-based podcast. So Tim and I are both journalists. We come to this as journalists. We're doing interviewing, reporting, storytelling. But I was also kind of a podcast junkie in my own personal life. So it started really with Tim and our editor, like, taking me out one day after I took this job and being like, here's your microphone. Like, let's start talking. But there has been a curve. I mean, as a print reporter, I never had to think about, when I was interviewing someone, the sounds that I would be making. A lot of times as a print reporter, you're used to, like, giving people affirmation, like, yeah. But you don't want to do that, because then you're going to end up on tape figuring out, like, who's a good talker. You may have – I had an experience a couple weeks ago with a woman who I thought would be this great interview because we had spent a lot of time together, just one-on-one. But when I put the microphone in her face, she kind of froze. And so we're not, you know, that was an experience to learn that, okay, people respond to me differently as a reporter when I just had a pen than when I have a microphone.
All right. Thanks, Camille. You know, I suspect a lot of people in the audience here tonight may be thinking about getting into the podcasting business, if you will. And I'll open this question to everyone on the panel. I would just caution anybody answer who feels they have an answer. Let's not have two people talking at the same time. That's the only stipulation there. I'll start it with Alex, though, and then everyone can jump in. What kind of obstacles can those people who might be thinking about doing what you're doing, what kind of obstacles can they expect to face?
So, I mean, there's a very basic question of equipment that I had to sort through, and it took me probably 6 months to – I bought the cheapest microphones I could find on Amazon and recorded and realized it sounded horrible, and I didn't want to listen to it. I knew other people weren't going to want to. So I finally, you kind of ease into it, and I returned all that stuff, bought some nicer stuff, returned all that stuff. And then, you know, at every point, it's like, it's only $200 more this time. So now I'm in it, you know, $400 or $500 for a couple microphones and a good digital recorder and things like that. That's an obstacle because it's hard to lay that out. But I would encourage you to, you know, do some research and get some decent equipment so it's listenable and it sounds good. The other thing is just practice. You know, we recorded five or six that are ended up in kind of the trash bin before we really recorded one that we shared with anyone. So it just takes some practice. And I don't know, I guess I like to talk, so that part wasn't too tough. But you do have to be aware of you have to know yourself and know what you're trying to say, I guess. You know, you have to know that you have a narrative to share and you're going to be able to fill in blanks and you have a direction for the conversation. Because it's pretty easy to, you know, hit record and just blab. But you have to do some planning and have a strategy when you start out.
Blabbing is what I do for a living. I understand exactly what you're saying. Let's see if other panelists can add to that or have anything different to put on this.
I would say that one of the challenges you face kind of in any kind of media, whether it's podcasting or otherwise, is finding your audience. So thinking about that in advance of even starting your podcast is always a wise decision so that you're thinking, okay, well, what social channels do they tend to live on? Like, who do I already know that's doing something similar so that I can ask them some questions and figure out how they discovered their audience? I mean, obviously, as a podcaster, you want listeners, and it's a challenge because there is such a saturated market of podcasting out there now. So finding kind of your own marketing chops, doing a lot of the research on how to find those people, I think is very important, and it is a challenge.
I think let me add that that's really important, but I think, and maybe Dustin will speak to this, is like do it for yourself. You know,
absolutely.
It's not if you're focused on what people might want to listen to, or you think there's an audience or something, you're going after that. It's not, I think it's probably not going to come across well. So,
yes.
You know, do it for a selfish reason, and that's going to come across. So if you're passionate about something, you really, you know, you research something or you really do enjoy it, that's going to come across to everyone.
Well, forgive this question. Sorry to interrupt the dialogue here, but is there a sense of ego tripping in this world?
It really depends on the subject matter.
Yeah.
If you're doing what I think of as a talking head podcast, where it's mostly you talking into a mic, and you know, it's whether it's a scripted thing or just a long bit of pontification, I mean, that can be pretty ego driven. There are some people out there that do that and do it really well and do it very effectively, and they've got huge listenerships, but you've got to know yourself before you jump into something like that. When you're doing a program that's interview-based, you know, that allows you to kind of remove that because you're talking about other people's stories, and so you know, you're there to share a conversation and be an interviewer, but it's not necessarily focused on you. And if you've got a show that has what I think of as kind of the Radio Lab / NPR style, which is where you're cutting back and forth, like your show, like it has, you know, when you've got sound bites and interviews and things, you can have a narrative that's balanced back and forth. But, you know, I think that you do have to be very careful when you're designing your narrative and figuring out, like, am I doing this because my dad used to use the phrase hollering to hear your head roar. If that's like the first motivation for you to get on there is that you just really want to like throw your opinion out there a lot, it's not to say that that's invalid, but you may have difficulty discovering an audience because other people may not care what you have to say, which is always a challenge. They might, though. You don't know.
Yeah,
I interrupted and I just did it again. So go ahead.
Good. I think that on our podcast, because we're interview style, I think that a lot of times I find that I'm over promoting the guest. Like,
yeah.
That's what I'm worried about. Like, this isn't a commercial. They're not paying me to do this. And so I think doing your homework is really important. Facebook has been a great tool to stalk people before I got to actually meet them. Not actually stalk them, but to get to know them and to script my questions in such a way that you know, it's going to be interesting, and it's not going to just be promoting what they're selling, if you will, or what they're doing. And I also think that creating that narrative in a story arc and bringing it back to different parts of their life as a human being and what made them as a young person maybe excited about the things that they're doing, I think that ties it all back together and it helps us not it just be a 30-minute or 40-minute commercial about their thing. Mm-hmm. So,
Wendy mentioned finding the audience. And my question is, do you find the audience, or do you really have to rely on the audience finding you? And how do they find you, if that's the case?
I would say both. You know, the advantage of today's media environment and just the way that we all live is you can actively seek out what you want to consume, but then there is still some sense of discovery sometimes. So we are deliberate about trying to make sure that people that we think might want to consume our content have the best kind of opportunity to find it. But then we also know that it happens, like, without us doing anything. People somehow hear about it, or a friend tells them, and I have no control over that. So it's both.
But with regard to what you do, you have the advantage, of course, because you've got an entire radio station and a system behind you that can promote what you're doing, and that certainly is going to be a big help.
Yeah.
It's a megaphone. You know, something that we've run into a lot over time, the podcast world is saturated. Because the barrier to entry is low. But if you go and start looking around on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn, any of those places, you're going to find a bazillion shows with 3 to 5 episodes that dropped off the map and disappeared. Your first biggest challenge is your own ability to keep going. It's real easy to do a first episode, maybe kind of easy to do 2. It's really hard to do 100. It takes a lot of dedication and a lot of work, and it's really easy to wash out really quickly when you discover that you thought you had a lot to say, and maybe you found you had 3 things to say and you burnt out. But when you're getting out and trying to promote yourself in that world, you're going to find there's a lot of static in the signal. There's a lot of other people who are competing in that same space that may have ideas that are fairly similar. If you don't have a built-in megaphone to help get it off the ground, you're in an uphill battle right from the beginning.
If anyone on the panel wants to elaborate on that, let me know. Otherwise, we'll take a break.
Let me say real quick that and I have to reiterate, but I'm doing the podcast for somewhat of a selfish reason. I mean, my website as well. I mean, there's traffic on it, but it's not yet my full-time job. And so, you know, if there's 50 people that find it or 1,500 people, you kind of have to be satisfied, because there's no the success of that is pretty arbitrary. So I don't know, you know, if you get to 50,000, what's that going to do? You know, if I get to 100,000, what does that do? And maybe it's monetized at some point. But you have to be patient. You have to be persistent and not expect... You know, everyone hears a story of something that just popped up and went, you know, quote, went viral, and that's just not realistic. So you do have to do it, and if it's not fulfilling for you and you're not energized by doing it, then maybe you're not doing it for the right reason.
You think there is money to be made in podcasting at some point?
I hope so.
that's a complicated question.
I'm not
question.
Betting on it yet, but I think, look, just like anything else, I mean, if you have an audience, you'll find advertising, you'll find support, and if you're in a niche that... there is an industry behind. I mean, think of Comic-Con. People thought it was an insane idea when this whole industry started a decade or more ago. And now these conferences are massive, and there's hundreds of millions of dollars involved, right? And so there are these niche industries that will support you financially.
So your advice to our audience might be, don't get into it for the money.
Right. No, you got to love it. I mean, you got to love whatever it is you're talking about or the people that you're talking to. I mean, nobody listens to my podcast. Raise your hand in this room if you've ever heard it. No one raise your hand. Okay, 2 people have heard the podcast.
Is that your mom and dad?
That's my mom and my dad. Hey, guys. No one listens to my podcast, but I love it. I love it. I mean, I get excited when I get that email back and someone says, yeah, I'll be on your podcast.
But a lot of this stuff has some permanence, too. I mean, a lot of these things are not news stories. It's not, here's what happened with a baseball team the other day or something. It's something that is a vignette of life, and a lot of what you do will be really cool 5 years from now. You know, so as long as you can keep it online and accessible, people will find it.
But when you look at your stats, right, when all of us, I don't know about everybody's numbers up here, but when I look at my stats, I get, like, if you start to get a big head, then you just look at, you know, This American Life stats.
Oh.
And you go, okay, 43 million people listen to this week's. And I just go, all right, I'll just meet another cool person this week, maybe, if I'm lucky.
Let me interrupt at this point. We have to take a break. We'll do that now. We'll continue our program on podcasting in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And we are back with our discussion on podcasting with podcasters Camille Stanley, Harrod Adrian and Wendy Buskey, Alex Enan, and Dustin Bryson. The question that comes to my mind, and while I'm using the word question, how many people in the audience here think they have questions at this point to ask? Okay. If you'll make your way over to the microphone, I'll ask one or two more, and then we'll start taking yours, okay? All right. The question that I wanted to get to was concerning production values. Alex Enan.
There's a minimum you have to reach. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there are ones I turn off after 20 seconds mm-hmm. because it's you can hear one person really well, and the other person is you know in the background clearly or something, and there's an echo. But it's getting lower and lower, and the technology is pretty good. And like I said, for you know $400, you can get equipment that sounds very very professional as long as you're in a room that isn't loud. You know, you're not recording in a cafe or something like that. So
which is exactly what we do.
Right. Well, sometimes you like the noise, right? Right. You like doors and things like that. So I think it's something you have to be conscious of, but I think it's never been easier to put together something that sounds very professional.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we purposefully record our podcasts in interesting places around the city. But there are times when the barista starts, you know, hitting that milk and it's so loud and we just run with it. We just keep going. Sure. And I think that some people turn us off after 20 seconds. Probably because of
Buskies, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, when we first started, we had a condenser mic, you know, and a board, you know, plugged into a MacBook. And, you know, and that's kind of how we got started with it. These days, I do all the production on it. And one of the things that destroys me in that first 20 seconds is listening to any show with where you have people having conversation with a lot of dead air, lots of ums and errs, a lack of editing. I'm crazy about that. It makes me nuts. So with our show, the thing that I'm really focused on is tightening up, keeping the conversation sounding natural, but also very, very clean. And we get from the very beginning, we've gotten comments from our guests who said, oh, you guys sound a lot better than most of the shows that we hear on your level because the production value is a lot higher. And that's because we put the effort into it. Now, I mean, we've got nicer mics and we've got pop guards and I've got a narration station with an isolation screen. And we've the studio room where we do it in our own house that like, you know, has paneling up to reduce echo reflections. And I've gotten a little crazy about it sometimes. But the goal is always to improve the sound, get us closer to sounding professional, and to, as much as possible, not sound like two people who do it out of a spare bedroom in our house. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it to sound like it's like a studio production.
Thank you for that. Let's take some questions from our studio audience here. Sir, if you would give me your name and tell us where you're from.
Yeah, hi, I'm Art from the Scammercast podcast and also podcast doula for A Priest and a Bishop Walk Into a Story. My question for the panel is, how much do you focus on monetization and how?
I'll go quickly. I haven't focused on it other than to introduce the opportunity to people. So I've mentioned through 10 episodes that you can sponsor this if you would like. You know, it kind of goes along with the website that's a companion to it. And so I'm getting ready to start a second season or a second group of podcasts, and those are sponsored. So not really making money, but it covers production costs. It pays back the stuff I bought, and I can go from there. So.
Yeah, I've thought about it also. I just want to get the ums out of ours. Like, I want to pay somebody to take the ums out. That would be great.
I think for us, monetization so far has been primarily sponsorships, and those have been not just random companies, but over the past 3 years, we've built up a lot of relationships with, you know, some really fantastic independent companies throughout the country. So we've approached them and said, hey, you know, you've either been a guest on our podcast or been on a panelist on one of our panels, or we've just met you and think that your product is great. Would you be interested in being a sponsor? And we've had really great response so far.
We went like 2 years without really thinking about monetization in a real way. Mm-hmm. We were looking at everything but the podcast for monetization. You know, now it is something that it's becoming a reality. I mean, we're not talking huge dollars. Yeah. But the industry in a lot of ways is not that dissimilar from other digital industries. When you're if you're familiar with advertising terms, there's something called a CPM, which means cost per thousand. In the podcast world, that means the cost per thousand downloads on a show. So when you have an NPR, This American Life, a Lore, you know, you've got millions of downloads, that CPM rate can be very high. when you're not playing in that same ballpark, you're going to have a hard time making actual money off of it. There's a steep curve before these things legitimately become profitable. Mm-hmm. But selling sponsorships to people who can see a direct result from mm-hmm. that and that are not interested in CPMs but are interested in direct impact and engagement, that is when you're on the lower end of things as far as downloads go and audience, your better chance of making money is that way.
Thank you for the question. We'll take the next gentleman right behind you there. Give us your name, sir, if you would, and your where you're from.
Sure. My name is Andy, and I live in Benton Park. I'm a middle school teacher in the St. Louis area, and the reason I'm attending this event is to kind of kick around some ideas on how I can use a podcast in my classroom. It's a relatively new medium for literacy in the digital age, and I was just kind of wondering if you had access to podcasts when you say you were 11 or 12 years old, how would you make use of it? And have you ever been approached by kids at that age range for your podcasts at all? And what do you think is the role of podcasts in the classroom in this day and age?
I just interviewed a 13-year-old filmmaker.
Really?
The podcast isn't out yet, but it'll be out soon, and it was fantastic. He's an amazing young man. But I love stories that the kids tell. We have them write books. We have them dream, and they have a journal in school. And I would love to hear their little voices coming through the radio. I think there's a lot there, and I think that they use their imagination on a whole nother level. So I think that could be a fantastic play.
Yeah. Cool. My first thought is storytelling, like having kids, you know, writing out their creative, you know, machinations, like, and then actually being able to speak them into a mic, like a radio show. I'd love that. I think that'd be great.
Yeah. Like giving them parts and stuff.
Yeah.
I think a podcast, it forces you to organize your thoughts and not, you know, and try mm-hmm. to cut out the ums, which is really hard the younger you are to speak concisely and organized and kind of stick to a narrative, but then also be able to join in a story when you're talking to somebody else. It'd be a great experience, I think. I mean, when I was that age, I was involved in journalism, I guess. You know, I wrote for our yearbook and newspaper and things like that, and podcasts would have been a natural extension of that. I think right when I was finishing school, some of the schools I'd gone through had little TV stations and stuff. You know, they were giving kids opportunities to be in broadcast opportunities. So it'd
exactly,
be very cool.
Yeah.
I think there's some great podcasts out there already that you could be incorporating into your classroom. I don't know if you listen to shows like Backstory that are all based on history, which, like, at any age, I love that podcast because it's just a history podcast, but you can learn a lot. So even if it's not them actively taking a part yet, but incorporating a way to learn about history or other topics, and just the way that they don't have to do that in the rest of their school day.
Thank you for the question. The next gentleman, please. Name and where you're from, please.
Hello, Kevin Arvell with the Who's Who in St. Louis show. One question I'd like, actually it's kind of a two-parter, is how long do you feel it took you to be comfortable behind the mic? Because it took me almost 2 years to kind of feel where I was really comfortable talking to the microphone, because I know a lot of people, once the camera red light goes on, the microphone, the red, you know, you start recording, it takes a while for people to get comfortable. And then also, how do you feel that podcasting has affected your, like, day-to-day in-person communications? Do you kind of find yourself almost subtly interviewing people that you're talking to
away from
the podcast?
It's my job, so I'm constantly getting in people's business. But I will say that for me, especially being new to podcasting and being new to, like, having a microphone in my face, it's every time we go into the studio, I learn something new, like whether it's things that I didn't know, mouth noises that I didn't know that I made when I talked. You know, I realized, wait, I think I do sound like my dad. Like, he slurs his S's, I slur my S's. You start to, I mean, our show is very produced and very scripted, so you start to learn about pacing and things like that and how you can, with the inflection of your voice, make different points. And we are very conscious because of the topics that we're covering about what tone are we taking. And so sometimes it's a little jokey, but sometimes it has to be very serious. And sometimes in a line, in a sentence, you have to be able to change it so that you can kind of get through to people. I guess I'm learning just kind of the power that it can, the power your voice can have with when you're telling somebody a story.
Man, that's suddenly very, very intimidating. Now I'm thinking about all that. I've never thought about this stuff before. I get on and I talk, and now I'm thinking I'm going to go back and listen, and I probably used the wrong intonation, and now I need to go study and practice. And so but it took me 2 years to basically kind of to get the podcast started, and I was lucky enough to, I've been on St. Louis on the air. I've done some television interviews and things like that. So it just took a long time to kind of get the courage and realize, like, oh, I can just have a conversation. And some of it's what Dustin, I was having these conversations in coffee shops and other places anyway. So it was pretty natural. And the first three or four people I interviewed were pretty close friends. I mean, I had met them a dozen times and talked about the same thing we talked about on the podcast. So it was a good way to ease into it.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes it's the other person. You'll get used to it and you'll get better and better as you go. But I think that the other person, like we talked about, they turn into a deer in headlights, and then all of a sudden you have to figure out how to get them the personality that you know that they have, the exuberance that you know that they have, to come out in that mm-hmm. podcast. So yeah, to calm down, relax, and just speak to you. That's why I use less equipment, actually. It's partly why. Also because we're in coffee shops and different places where you can't lug in a bunch of stuff.
Thank you for the question. We'll take the next one as well.
Hi, I'm Claire. I'm from St. Louis. So I am very lucky in that I get to produce a podcast for a living. I work for Washington University and make a weekly podcast called Hold That Thought. I talk to researchers and scientists and get to showcase their work. But marketing and promotion seems like this whole other beast, so I just wanted to do a follow-up question. I know we talked a little bit about that already, because even though I've been doing this for more than 3 years, I'm sure very few, if any of you, have heard of Hold That Thought. So specifically with social media or any other tools you have, you mentioned Comic-Con, but more for Alex and Dustin, how do you get the word out?
So I have a marketing background. That's sort of my jam. And and so I whatever medium's hot right now, I mean, Instagram's huge. I bring a camera everywhere I go. And so I film 15 and 30 second and 60 second clips for Instagram. I also shoot lots of stills. And I try to create really interesting images about the subject so that when we push those with a link, people see the image on Instagram, or I'll do quotes on Twitter just to get their interest up and hope they'll come back and hit that link and pay attention to what we have to say. What I've also found is interview style podcasts are great because the person that you're interviewing has an audience. And so if you take good images, they're going to push those. If you have a good interview, they're going to tell all their friends. And that's been monumentally helpful.
And I want to mention, don't be afraid to ask them to as well. I think that's something that a lot of podcasters are a little bit timid about. Like, send the email afterwards saying, here's the link that you can share. And if you have a great image, send that to them too. So that, yes, they'll probably see it on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram if you share it. But following up with that thank you email as well and then asking them to is very helpful.
The thing that can be deceptive as well in those arenas is you might build a following someplace that engages with you there that does not translate into listenership. And you can find people that love to engage with your voice and think you're cool and think what you do is awesome, but they don't download anything and they don't leave your reviews. And at the end of the day, they don't move you forward at all. So finding where those pockets of people are and how you can mobilize them is really the big challenge. And email still matters.
And I'll just add, I think that the more contextual you can be and the more timely you can be and realize that you have an opportunity every week, every month, every day to kind of reintroduce yourself to people. So you're at Washington mm-hmm. University, right? Everyone's heard of that. At this point, I grew up in Indiana, had never heard of the university until I moved to Missouri, right? That's crazy. I don't know why I hadn't heard of it. I hadn't. But you don't assume that everyone knows you, or don't assume that when you post a podcast and, you know, everything hits and then peters off, right? Mm-hmm. Well, one of your researchers is probably going to do something incredible next year. Bring it back, re-promote it, send it to everyone again.
I have to take another break. We'll do that now. We'll continue our program on podcasting in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And we are back now with our discussion of podcasting here in St. Louis. Our podcaster panelists are Camille Stanley, Adrian and Wendy Buskey, Alex Enan, and Dustin Bryson. Let's go right to the questioners who've been so patient in studio. Go ahead, sir, your name, please, and where you're from.
My name is Tom Cecil. I live here in St. Louis City. This is a little bit of a follow-up to Claire's question. And essentially, aside from my wife, who I sort of forcibly or maybe tricked her into listening to podcasts on some long car rides, my family doesn't know about podcasts, and a lot of my friends don't know about podcasts. And so, I think you mentioned the market's saturated, but I think that the market really hasn't even begun to reach a quarter of its size. I wonder if you all agree with that, if I'm just sort of living in a bubble. And then if you do agree with that, I'm wondering, how do you introduce the world, the non-NPR world or the non-radio world, to the universe of podcasting?
I do agree with you. I will tell you that we know from our metrics that about 20 to 30% of our audience is here in St. Louis. The rest, we have people from all over the country and all over the world listening to We Live Here. Just because I think it's more common in bigger cities and people know about it. I think the way that you introduce it to people is you just kidnap them. like when you're going to the grocery store, when you're, you already did this with your wife apparently on a long ride. When you get into your car and you're like, let's go do something, you could turn on some music or, listen to Lemonade. I do that. But sometimes when I have my friend in the car, I'm like, okay, let's put on this. I listen to podcasts now, when I'm cleaning the house. We do consume a lot of media. I just think it's the thing with podcasts is you have to be a little bit more active, because whereas we're used to like passive listening, but with a podcast you have to go someplace and push play deliberately. So I think you just kind of spread the gospel and have you listen to this.
I think it's happening pretty naturally. But I have to explain what a podcast is to my parents and grandparents, and they now know what Netflix is, right? It's the same thing. It's just radio. Mm-hmm. And frankly, a lot of I listen to St. Louis on the Air. I always listen to it on the website. I'm generally not at a radio during the day. So it's simply it's a pretty easy concept. And as you start to see this kind of a la carte media consumption, it fits right in for that. So I think it is going to take off. And that's how everyone's consuming everything from movies to TV shows to everything else now. So you can, you can binge listen to, We Live Here and consume it that way. You can wait a month and then say, oh yeah, I haven't heard it for a while, I'll listen to it now. And it's kind of on demand. So I think that's just the nature of media consumption is going to make it a much, much bigger deal.
For new consumers, it's always about their gateway drug. It's about that first thing that grabs them and turns them into a fan of a medium. In recent time for podcasts, that's Serial. Serial had an enormous effect on bringing new listeners in because it caused water cooler conversation. People who were podcast fans already heard it, freaked out about it, went to work, talked to their friends, said, you've got to listen to this thing, it's so compelling. And it brought in enormous new audiences to a medium that people are aware of, but not necessarily something that they were seeking out before. And some of it, I think, is because it felt before like it was amateur hour. People had that thought of like, oh, podcasts are something that people just, are being thrown together. They didn't have that realization that the quality of programming that is out there is amazing.
Let's take that next question. This gentleman's been waiting for a long time. Yeah. And thank you for doing so, sir. Your name, please, and where you're from.
Dre Montez, and I have a show called Who's to Blame. My big thing is about the sound. Being spoiled by Radio Life the past 15 years, I'm so used to being in that studio. Now, do you rent space, or do you convert an extra room in your house? And then also with editing, do you do it yourself, or do you send it out? What's the best approach on that method? And that's the back of the list.
Yeah, I think my experience is that, again, with reasonable equipment, you can find a mostly quiet place, and it's going to sound good. And with some practice, I think you can edit at the beginning and end. There are better ways to do it, and maybe I'll evolve and do more editing and find a sound booth or a studio or something, but that's how I approach it.
All right, if there's no further response, do you have something, Adrian?
You can get a Yeti mic and put yourself in a closet, and you can sound pretty good. I mean, some of those mics that are designed for podcasters have great sound. They have different settings to allow you to adjust to the room. The learning curve can be steep sometimes, but it's literally playing it by ear. It's sitting down and listening to it and saying, hey, does this sound good enough for me? And to begin with, that's really all you need to worry about. When it gets into the editing of stuff, and you know, we haven't even touched what it takes to submit to iTunes, what it is to have an RSS feed, like how the tagging of things goes. Those are huge conversations and probably too big to really get into in a forum like this. But there's a lot of technical aspects to submitting it that you don't have any idea. Like your ID3 tagging on your MP3 file and the OGG file that you need to put like, along with it in order for it to stream on the web. Those are things you're going to need to know eventually if you want to garner a large audience through the normal distribution channels.
So where do you go to learn that?
Lots and lots and lots of blogs.
YouTube.
There's books on it. I have yet to find a decent starting a podcast book that I felt gave me the answers to the questions I was looking for. Instead, I read 150,000 different blogs and then figured it all out by trial and error.
And there's a podcast now out that teaches you how to podcast.
Of course.
There is.
And it's on YouTube, of course.
But I think for editing, for 50, I don't, I'm making this up in a way, but $50 to $100 per episode is probably what it takes to send it to someone and have them just, you know, process it and send it back in a file that you don't have to worry about all these codes and things like that. So there's a cost to it, and there are people in town that do that.
I do all the editing on ours in Adobe Audition, which is part of the Adobe Creative Suite, mostly because I thought GarageBand was awful and I didn't want to do it. But I'm really meticulous about it. And between doing the actual recording interview and doing all the edits on it and prepping it for iTunes and all that stuff, I probably put 8 hours into every one of just the episodes, just the audio.
Our time is beginning to wind down. I have a couple more questions, one of which I've been reading about. You would know better than I, but there are some concerns in some quarters about a lack of diversity in the podcast world. Is that something that is happening, not happening, or changing?
My view is that as you get more and more niche in every industry, you become more segmented in a lot of ways, in a negative way, right? So if you're passionate about mountain biking, you know, you're going to end up talking to a lot of mountain bikers, and that community is not all that diverse, right? So I'm trying to take a view of things that are happening in the city and trying to make some, intentional efforts to make sure we get diverse voices, you know, but I also want to talk about, you know, the latest engineering and light rail technology. Well, that's going to lead you to a particular source. And so it's something you do have to make a conscious effort of, and especially depending on your topic. But that's an ongoing challenge. And I think the challenge within podcasting probably mirrors the challenge in all other media.
Any other thoughts, reflections on that? Or I'll just move along.
It's become a little bit of a joke when you look at people who do some kinds of podcasting, but particularly YouTubers, that that there's just a whole lot of bespeckled, balding, facial-haired white guys in the realm. And there has been more than once when I've had people be like, oh, you look like Wheezy Waiter, or you look like X person from YouTube or whatever. And I realize, there's a proliferation of guys who look like me doing this kinds of stuff. But the thing is that the podcast realm, like if you go and you search stuff, you know, on iTunes or whatever the platform you want to search for on, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of shows, and there are a lot of different voices. There may be certain groups that are overrepresented, and I think that is just purely that maybe balding, bespeckled white guys just happened to jump in first, and we were really impressed with our own voices, and so we are all like, I want to do this! But the thing is that the podcasting realm, like, there aren't gatekeepers, you know? It's like if you've got a voice and you've got something to say and you've got an idea that you want to go with, you can jump into it and do it. So, like with any media, like there's certainly times when you've got overrepresentation, and you know the way to fix that is to add your voice and support the voices that you want to hear.
Is this replacing radio, or is it 21st century radio?
Well, I still don't think people know what podcasting is. I mean, a lot of people don't. I mean, YouTube did a really great job of explaining what they were. They were a channel for people who just wanted to broadcast themselves. Even still today, when we talk about podcasting, is that a radio show? Is it not a radio show? This American Life and other radio shows then make a podcast afterwards, like we're going to do with this. And, well, was that a podcast or was that? And so I still think we're sort of in its infancy. So I think it's going to grow, and I don't think it's going to replace radio.
Another question.
Yes, I'll make it a quick question. My question is, My name is April. I'm a recent alum of the Community Artist Training Institute through RAC. My question is, in terms of St. Louis and podcast specific to St. Louis, what do you think as a medium the podcasting can do to heal the region and promote social change in the region? And what do you think are the limits of the medium as well?
I guess I'll take that question because I think a lot of the topics that we explore on We Live Here are a lot of the issues that this region is currently wrestling with. And so, you know, as a journalist, I'm not necessarily out there to say, like, I'm going to heal anything, but I certainly hope that through journalism, through investigations, through holding people accountable, through sharing people's stories, that people are able to have a space to kind of work through these issues, either through the listening or maybe sharing it with their friends or things like that. I think some of the limits is that a lot of these topics that we're trying to dissect, there can be kind of a fatigue that sets in. Not everybody wants to talk about it. Not everybody wants to listen to it. So I think that's just a natural limit that you have with any sort of journalism.
I'll say that I think the power of it is you can really humanize someone. And I've had such great response to some of my podcasts where people have sent me an email and said, you know, thanks for having so-and-so on. I won't name names, but they're, you know, I thought this person was kind of a political henchman and I thought he was kind of evil and just a bad person. And yet you hear their voice and you hear their enthusiasm about the city of St. Louis, and it makes them a person, right? And I think a lot of our social media is just so, I mean, we're stripping away the personalities and people's real voices. And so it just becomes very easy to blame people and retweet things that are against this or against that. And you lose track of the fact that there are real people and real voices behind it. And a podcast can do that in what is now considered long form, right? So someone can be interviewed on television, but it's 90 seconds or 30 seconds or something like that. So having a real conversation face-to-face with another person over a half hour or so breaks down a lot of barriers, I think.
There's just a natural intimacy, I think, when you're listening to something. You know, you have your headphones in, you may be alone in the car, and you're hearing somebody's voice come through. That can be that can stick with you longer than, say, reading even the best story or, like you said, seeing something on TV for 90 seconds and you've already formed your opinion.
And stories give context. So if it's that type of a podcast and you can hear about how someone got into the thing that they're into or their childhood, I think that brings that humanity full circle, and you get to know someone better without actually having a conversation with
them.
Well,
it offers context. And yeah. I think that's what we miss so much in sound bites. Like, you know, you hear a sentence or a word or something inflammatory and it's, you know, like you said, it's a 90-second excerpt of what was a much bigger conversation. So I think podcasting is great for being able to offer context to the conversation.
A story compellingly told can reach a person who would be otherwise uninterested in the subject matter. You can see that a lot of some of the great podcasts that are out there will tell you really fascinating stories and narratives about stuff you would never care about. Mm-hmm. And those things can be really enriching because they open your mind to a lot of stuff. And I think when you talk about the local matters, I mean, that's the way. Is when you have a show that's well-produced with voices that people enjoy listening to, as long as they're telling that story in an interesting way and in presenting it in a way that the audience will find compelling and engaging, you gain the ability to teach them about things that they otherwise may not have been open to.
We're going to go down the line, and I'll start with Camille Stanley, and I'll introduce each one of you as we get to this point, but it's commercial time. Camille, what's the next podcast?
Oh, the next podcast, we are diving into affordable housing, and we're really excited about it, particularly because it'll be a different, it'll sound a little bit different than our ones up until now, because we take you to cities outside of St. Louis, so you'll hear kind of a national perspective.
Alex Enan, your next podcast.
Yeah, I'm doing something different as well. I've been local, speaking with people in St. Louis up until now, but next up are two authors, one, Peter Lawrence, who wrote Becoming Jane Jacobs. We'll be interviewing him about her. And then David Dayan, who wrote a book about the housing mortgage crisis and will be in town in July for a speaking event.
Dustin Bryson, your next podcast.
My next podcast is with Feed Me with Amanda. She's a young lady who is a transplant here and began taking photos of food all around town, wanted to find the best places to eat and the funnest places to hang out. And she was just a joy to be with and to talk to. And she has a ton of stories and already has met everyone in town.
Wendy Buskey.
Our next podcast is actually with a local independent gaming company that has recently hit pretty big, named Butterscotch Shenanigans. They're run by Sam and Adam and Seth Koster, and they're all super interesting guys that do a lot of speaking and game shipments locally about game development, and just really interesting, and it's exciting to talk to someone that is St. Louis based that's really starting to blow up.
Adrian Buskey, can you add anything to that?
Yeah, the St. Louis video game scene is actually erupting. There's a lot of small independent houses that are doing some really great things here. There's a St. Louis video game co-op.
St. Louis Game Dev Co-op.
Yeah, thank you. That groups people together. So, I mean, along with the rise of tech and startup, I mean, the video game stuff is blowing up. And the Butterscotch guys have just released a game called Crashlands that got featured on every, like, major system, Steam and iTunes and things like that. And so, and that came out of our backyard with local STL people. So we think that's really awesome to share their voice.
I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Camille Stanley, Adrian and Wendy Buskey, Alex Enan and Dustin Bryson, thank you so much for being with us. And thanks, too, to our studio audience. Thank you. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at recent data about police stops in the region. We'll also talk with local reality star British Williams about the real story behind reality television. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.